Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet. Which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Risen Motherhood. We are so excited to share this interview with you guys today with Sally Clarkson, someone who has influenced both Laura and I so much in motherhood. So Sally is the author of many books, including The Mission of Motherhood and The Ministry of Motherhood, which are a couple of our favorites. And she just released a new book called The Life-Giving Table that's kind of all about discipleship and nourishing the faith of your children in the everyday rhythms of mealtime. So today she's joining us to discuss the impact that moms can have in the lives of their little ones. And she provides lots of encouragement for utilizing mealtime to just communicate the grace of Christ to our kids. So if you want more details on this book or any of her other ones that we've just really enjoyed, you can find those resources at our show notes at risenmotherhood.com. So I will let you guys get started on the interview. Well, hi, Sally. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
I am so excited. This is so much fun. I love being with kindred spirits.
Great. Well, we are totally have personally benefited from your ministry, and so we are really excited to pick your brain.
Yeah.
This will be fun.
Yeah. Tell us, for our listeners who haven't heard of you, I know most of them probably have, many of them probably have read one or more of your books, and we continue to promote them on Risen Motherhood because we have been so impacted. But tell us just a little bit about yourself, maybe your heart for your ministry to moms, and even maybe the concept behind your new book.
Okay, great. Well, I have four children, Sarah, 33, Joel, 31, Nathan, 28, and Joy, 22, and they're all somehow they turned out well, and they love the Lord.
Still by God's grace, right?
Dishes, yeah. But I was in after college. I was in missions in Vienna, Austria, and in Eastern Europe, and so I cut my teeth on discipleship and building into these leaders that were in Eastern Europe. Thinking, if we left the country, what would we have to do to really leave a legacy of faith and encouragement? And then eventually, after being there for 6 years, I married my husband that I'd known for many years. And when we had children and we went back over to Vienna to work in a chapel there, we both talked about the fact that we wished that we could apply all that we were learning in our ministry to our children, to pass on a legacy of faith and education and morality and vision for their own lives story. And so many years ago, we moved out to this tiny little place in the middle of nowhere with my mother-in-law, which is a whole nother story. But we moved to the middle of Texas into this tiny little town called Walnut Springs. And we worked on some books and started our ministry, went for almost 5 years without a salary, and thought, if we're interested in mentoring our children, I bet a lot of other families are too. And eventually, literally, we just started, we had a shoebox and a little tiny office, and we started getting hundreds and hundreds, then thousands of requests from people all over the world to say, will you pass on your materials to us? Will you come speak for us? We are interested in really having an impact on our children too. So that was 21 years ago. We started Moms Conferences. We did those for 21 years and I've written 14 books. Together we've written 20 books, and our kids are all authors. It's kind of genetic in our family. And so that kind of leads to this new book, The Life-Giving Table. I had written The Life-Giving Home, which was my daughter and I trying to give a vision for what it looks like to have the organic life of love and faith in a mom's home, how to create traditions and rhythms and all that. And then I had so much response to that, I started praying about this book, which is The Life-Giving Table, because our children grew up in a home where the oxygen of our home was talking and learning and encouragement and feasting all the time. We're like hobbits. We love to eat. So anyway, I realized that my daughter just graduated from Oxford, Sarah did, and my daughter Joy just got her master's at St. Andrews. This will have a point. And Joel is a composer and also getting his master's and possibly PhD. Joy's moving on to her PhD this year. And Nathan, my ADHD, ODD, OCD, out-of-the-box son, also ended up being a writer. He's written books, and he's also written movies. And so I realized that our family table was where we really discipled and where our children learned ideas, and we talked about ideals and faith. And so I really believe that in a generation where women are isolated and they spend so much time in technology and there's so much fast food, that when you ponder the idea that you will probably, your children will probably consume almost 20,000 meals in their first 18 years, you begin to realize, oh my goodness, if 18 or 19,000 times I was intentional about just speaking to them, encouraging them, loving them, and incarnating the love and the messages of Christ and of my faith, then I think that that would be an amazing way to lay one brick at a time of developing the convictions in their hearts and minds and developing a vocabulary, developing ideas, if I just did it one little day at a time. And so that's where the idea came from.
Yeah. Well, I know Laura and I are both kind of newly postpartum. We have newborns. And even at the very beginning, the amount of time that you spend feeding your child and preparing to feed and then coming down off of that and then getting ready to feed again is so much
it's so true.
The very beginning.
Yeah.
Where like that soul nourishment can happen of even just connecting with your newborn. And then they get into the toddler years and they want a snack every 2 hours.
And that's how you appease them.
Yeah. And then you get to where, okay, wow, I maybe did 5 small meals with my child today.
Yeah.
It really does add up fast. And it's totally relatable to say, wow, what if you did redeem that time and you're really intentional with it. So I'm really excited to hear more about that.
Yeah. I think can we come back to that in a minute? Because I want to hear sort of, Sally, you have this really beautiful, larger vision about why daily work of the home of a mother matters to God and how it helps us communicate that message of the gospel to our children. And I know mealtimes will be a part of that. So I want to take time later to talk about that specifically. But if right now you could just sort of cast that vision, I know you've really inspired Emily and I many times to say, whoa, what we're doing as moms is way more than just changing diapers and taking them to school and things like that. So we'd love to just hear you talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think I was raised in a family of all boys, and I was the youngest child. I was a preemie, so I was a spoiled brat because my parents kind of treated me in a fragile sort of way. So really, by the time I had children, I wasn't prepared. I had only babysat a couple of times my whole life. I was almost 31 years old. But I remember when Sarah came out and I was holding her. Sarah's my first child. It was almost as though I felt the impression of God saying to me, do you realize that this child that you're holding will have implications for eternity? And I am trusting this child into your hands so that you can show this child what the love of God feels like, what the truth of God looks like, what the integrity of God is like in daily life. And I'm trusting you to be a picture to her of what all of this that encompasses your faith will be in your home so that she will believe in me and so that she can go into her world and have an impact. And she will have a story to tell because of the way that you raise her. And I'm trusting this to you as a gift. And, it was over a little bit of time, of course, that I developed that idea more, but I realized that children are these precious treasures that will go into the next generation. They are going to become either the leaders of the next generation or those who are making moral choices. In other words, we get this amazing opportunity in our home to create a life so that they can grow strong intellectually, spiritually, emotionally. And of course, I developed that over the years, and it took me forever to kind of figure out that it's more about relationship than it is about, I think all mothers want a formula. You know, just tell me, what are the 9 ways to build an excellent child? And I realized that each of my children had a totally different personality. I have 2 boys and 2 girls, 2 introverts, 2 extroverts. And so it seems like everything that we started doing after a few years was about the heart. How do you reach that internal personality, the heart, the mind, the life? And it's been so much fun for me to see my children go into their own worlds, and they're all excited. They're driven. They want to be intentional. They want to bring God's light to their world. And they're all in very secular arenas, loving people, teaching people. And so I realized that we may not, nobody has ever said to me, Sally, what were your SAT scores? They've never said that to my children, but they have said, tell me about your life. Tell me who you are. And so I realized as a culture, we focus so much on the performance and so little on the relationship that I was inspired to write about it and to speak about it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's something we are trying to learn ourselves as moms of young children, to go back to the heart. Cause exactly like you said, it is easy to rely on that formula and just go, oh, what's, you know, this older mom's parenting advice.
Yeah.
But the thing that seems to make the most difference is getting down on their level and speaking to their heart motivations and their heart attitudes, and helping them understand, as we understand, like, this is what God really cares about, is why I'm doing this and who I'm worshiping. And I want to help you think through that too. Like, who are you worshiping? What's going to make you the most happy? And it's obeying God, you know?
Right. Well, and I guess I was surprised at how much eventually I realized I love home. I was a professional working woman before I got married. And, you know, I began to realize that my sweet little ones, you know, I tried to pour love into them at the beginning, just thinking, I want them to feel the acceptance and the love that they need. And I had to learn that all babies don't sleep, and that all babies start out immaturely, moving towards maturity. But I fell in love with them. And eventually, over the years, I would read them a story and I would think, oh, my goodness, they learned from me. And, you know, I realized that it was really fulfilling for me to be raising my own best friends right in my home. Were there messes? Yes. Did I struggle? Yes. Was I ever depressed? Of course. But I think I just slowly gained a vision for these little human beings are part of me, and I want to do this work well because I care about what happens to them.
Yeah, and kind of speaking about those responsibilities that we have and staying focused on, you know, the right order of things, what does the gospel, or how does the gospel free a mom of her guilt when she's sort of failing or feels that she's failing in motherhood? How would you encourage her to be able to serve diligently in her own unique way through the gospel?
I think that you have to be focused. I think that if you have too many goals on your plate at the same time, if you think I can work, and I'm going to get my master's degree, and I'm going to raise these 4 children under 5, and I'm going to have a perfect house, and, you know, they're going to speak Greek by 4. I mean, I feel like, I feel like sometimes the things that moms, the pressure that they have to be perfect is really ridiculous. And I realized, I was praying one day, and it was as though the Lord said, don't you know that I have understood toddlers since the beginning of time? And as a matter of fact, you're kind of like a toddler to me. you know, you aren't quite as quick to learn things as you think. And, you know, you aren't quite as mature as me, but I still love you. And I think that we have it's a long road, and God is gracious. And I love the story in the Bible about the little boy who brought his fish and loaves to Jesus and said, a lot, but here's my offering to feed the 5,000. And in of Christ, his sacrifice became enough. And I think I began to realize that that's how I was with my kids. I know all the answers. I wasn't a perfect mom, but I would say, God, would you reach their hearts? And would you make what I give to you enough? Here's my fish and loaves. And I think too, understanding that I would that God never expected me to be perfect. One of my, there's two verses I loved over the years. One of them was in Psalm 103, and it says, "He is mindful that you are but dust." And I thought, oh my goodness, so God knows I'm already just dust to begin with. you know, I mean, in other words, he knew my limitations and he made my personality, and I have strengths and weaknesses. And then the other verse that I loved was where there are many or where there are no oxen, the stalls are clean. And I thought, oh my goodness, I have six oxen every day. And so if I have that many oxen in my home, it's okay for it to be in and out of mess and in and out of order. Mm. And, I learned little by little to, of course you get stronger, your muscle, your mother muscle, I will say, gets stronger over the years and you can handle more and, your capacity grows. But I realized that one of the most important things for me is that my children wanted a happy mom. That I think so many mothers give the legacy to their children of guilt or criticism. You know, why do you always do this? And I thought, no matter what else, I think I want to choose to be joyful, practice over and over again, learning to be content. And it takes a long time. I'm still learning. But I realized that when I could just live in the grace of the moment of that phase of life and of that difficulty, if I didn't react to everything, the happier I was as at accepting my limitations, the happier everyone else was in the family.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you just use that statement of like, we don't want to pass on a legacy of guilt. And I think when we are believing the gospel, it does produce authentic joy and happiness because we realize we're not free. Like you said, we're dust and we can accept our limitations. And it's when, moms are trying to live up to like this perfect standard that it is, that's not believing what Christ did for us. And of course it's going to pass on guilt because that's what's still there in our hearts when we're not rooting our identity in Christ. So I love that point.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I really feel like that even my whole life is based on pondering Christ. Mm-hmm. He loved children. He gave grace to Peter when he failed. He said, "Woe to the one who causes the least of these little ones to stumble." He wanted us to be shepherds to them like he was the shepherd to us. And so I would just read a passage and I would ponder it and think, okay, if Christ did this, then I can love my children. I can shepherd them. I can walk in grace. And I think that for me, the whole key to even who my kids have become is that they learned early to believe in the love and the grace of Christ and that he would be with them wherever they went. And that, he had a story for them to tell because he had created their personalities. And yeah, everything that I would learn became the foundation of what I passed on to them in terms of, his message and his love for us.
Mm-hmm. So going kind of back to the idea of mealtimes and what we started diving into at the beginning of the interview, I know that that is a real time of a great chance for communication. As you said, nearly 20,000 meals over the course of a child's life, which
wow.
I'm still chewing on that number.
Wow. It makes me tired just thinking about it.
I know. Exactly. And like we were saying, that's not even counting snacks.
Exactly.
So, oh my goodness.
Tea times.
Yeah, tea there you time. Go. So, you know, how do we use mealtimes as a gospel training ground, or what can we do? What can a mom do practically at mealtime to really invest well in her children?
Well, I think that one of the things that there's several things that are important. First of all, when you have little ones, there's so many things you get to pass on at the table, consideration of other people, manners, just learning for them to learn to sit still for 5 minutes. The beginning of what you're doing with them is gathering them together. Even when my kids were little, I would light a candle, put on music, and say, this is such a special time because we belong to each other. We're a family. And even if it was just for a few minutes, I would try to be sure to feed them before they were so starving that they fell apart. I would try to always say, I am so honored to have you as my children. Tell me one of the most important thoughts you've been thinking today. You know, you start out with few expectations in the sense of knowing that they're young, but you are shaping them nonetheless. And the other thing I wanted to say is that, so you see it as a training grounds, as a time to build community and love and relationships and stuff. And then the second thing is you can't really be building, into their lives unless you have a treasure chest of ideas and goodness in your life. And so I began to realize that the more I would read or the more people I would learn from or the more books I would collect or magazines or articles, then I would have something interesting for them to draw from. It, a lot of moms come to the table not realizing that it's such a great place to mentor. I mean, I look at Jesus, you know, one of the very last stories in the Bible about him is Peter and his friends had fished all night and caught nothing, which was reminiscent of the first time that they had met Christ. And all of a sudden they look on the shore and they smell fish sizzling. And they see that somebody is there and they go, oh my goodness, it's Christ. And so they, you know, he jumps in the water, swam quickly over, all the men come. But Christ had prepared this wonderful smell good meal for these men. And then he said, Peter, feed my sheep. You know, he basically put him back in charge of being the rock. And at the Last Supper, it says that Jesus prepared for them. And he probably, I'm thinking he got a room that he prepared for them that was based on looking towards the sunset, because he created the sunset. And he created the Passover meal. And when they came in, he washed their feet and he spoke these wonderful words of love to them. And then he fed them, and then he gave them the most profound message at the end of his life. And so I began to realize God made us to love eating. He made lots of great food. And when we can come to a table where the atmosphere is acceptance and where we're thinking about, when I go to the table, I can become an influencer of my precious children. You have to set your mindset. When you come to the table, and it's not perfect every day, of course, I have this opportunity to communicate that they have a place to belong, that we have a message as a family, that I want to hear their ideas, and that I will help them shape faith in their future story. So it's just such a life-giving place. And I really believe that, you know, people have often said, how did your kids get into these highbrow schools, which was never my goal. I said, it's because of our table, because all we did was talk. So it's talking every night, and that will accomplish a lot more than finding the perfect school or the perfect teacher or the perfect curriculum, if you've prepared your heart with ideas and things to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think even with, you know, our littlest children, I know a lot of our listeners, some of their kids are under age 2 or under age 4, and I think about in our home during dinner, you know, maybe it's mac and cheese is on the table. There isn't, you know, we're at dinner, and I'm just glad everybody has bottoms in chairs, right?
Exactly.
Bottom in the seat. Mm-hmm. And, but we work through high lows, and that's something that I think is like a really easy takeaway of, you know, we say, what's the high from your day and what's the low from your day? And
my kids just love. That's a great idea. Yes.
Yeah. And my daughter's is always swinging because she goes high. She's still kind of learning the concept of that. No, that's the best part of your day, honey, but that's okay. So, but it's really been fun because they'll say, Mom, let's talk about high lows. And, you know, we say, what made you sad? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What made you sad? Share your low, or what made your high? This is something that you did that's fun. And it's been amazing how those conversations, even with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, mm-hmm. have sort of led to, oh, this was something, you know, my 4-year-old's sad because they fought today with his sister when his sister hit him. And that's a good opportunity, like you were saying, mm-hmm. for a training ground of just talking about, well, why does it hurt your feelings? And, you know, we all do bad things. We all sin, and we can be grateful for Jesus. And I love how you said too, that you belong together, because that's something that mm-hmm. I talk with my kids about a lot too, is that, you know, we are whifflers. We belong together. We have each
right.
other's backs.
Right.
And just even using that time around the table to really build that or ingrain it deeper. Mm-hmm. And we also use it in discipline, you know, when they are fighting together. I talk about, you guys, we're family. Family is forever.
Right.
And so wanting them to remember that, like, we are a unit and we support one another. We always love one another. And so I really like that phrase that you used. And I just think you're so right about these mealtimes being just critical, I think, to the future.
Well, and I think that sometimes, you know, a child can be rolling their eyes or playing with a truck or,
right,
or spilling the milk or whining or complaining. And you think, does this even matter? Am I making any inroads? And, it's funny because I know both of our boys, one of them was overseas and the other one was actually living in Hollywood. And they both called home right before Christmas one year. And they said, I can't wait to come home. And I said, what's your favorite thing about home? And they both said, it's feasting at our table where we belong and talking with each other and being friends, because there's just nothing like this. And it started out when they were wee little ones. And I think your Hilo is excellent. And just tell Daddy the story of your day or what book did you read?
Yes.
Because that in and of itself creates an environment where children perceive themselves as communicators, and that what they have to say matters. And I really think, I didn't know that's what I was developing, but I look back now and I realize that when we engage their little brains, it's building mental muscles. And they look forward to it. You're just developing it little by little. You're developing the habits. And when you have a total chaos, you kind of close the book on that day and then you have another day and it gets better and better. But if you don't establish the expectation of table and that this is who we are, this is what we do, you set the table, you do this, you do that, you have a harder time building those rhythms and those expectations of conversation that will build them into great friends.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that's hard to do. I think as you're describing it, I have like this ideal in my mind. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, I would love for it to be this picturesque way and our kids respond the way I want them to and all of that. But I think the reality of it is that it's very mundane and it's very like what you're describing. Somebody spills milk and somebody brought their three stuffed animals to the table and you're like, well, right, I don't think that those should sit near your syrup. I think we should put those over here. It looks a little, I think, sloppier than that in real life. That's okay with young children because as you're saying, that rhythm is still there. And I think that's something that the grace of God frees us every day to say, you know what? Yesterday did get crazy. We did, maybe not use mealtime intentionally, but like, hey, everyone is here today. We're ready to talk through this thing, the high lows. I know we sometimes use it for training in like catechisms or telling stories or something like that. That it's like mom can start over again. And I have to remember that because when you feel like you've had a hard day, it sometimes feels like, oh no, this is what I'm always going to be like.
No. And the other thing you can say is you can say, okay, so if it is 19,658 or whatever, I actually multiplied it out one day when I thought, how am I going to do this? But whatever it was, you can also say, oh, I have that many chances to have do-overs.
Chances. I like that.
You know, because I have, I wrote a book called Different. I have a different child who loves to argue, still loves to argue, and did argue yesterday. What I mean is we have, it doesn't mean that it's stress-free, but it does mean that we recognize it as a place where life and good life can take place. But it doesn't happen unless there's somebody who conducts the beauty in the life of the table. And I've even said, you know, what if you did it once a week for people who generally aren't together? What if you start doing it three times a week? But it's more that you see the value of it. And a lot of people think that I'm talking about China and Crystal because now I have older kids now. And so some of the pictures that of course you'll see of me because they're videos, might be these fancy dishes or whatever, but it's not about that. It's about, it might be paper plates and, some Cheerios or some little crackers or some little vegetables or apples. And, it's more about saying we all love to eat, so let's use this moment. And everybody has different tastes. It's really not about the performance. It's about the love and the friendships and the life that if you do that 19,000 times and move in the direction of a foundation of love at the end of the day, no matter what, we will love each other and forgive each other. Then they will be prepared to say that and do that in their adult lives.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I want to go home and make dinner right now.
I'm going to get out my paper plates and display the apples really pretty and talk about how we love each other.
Light a candle with those apples.
I know. No, I'm teasing. Yeah. Oh, no, I love that. I think it's a rhythm in everyone's day. We all eat, as you said, for us to be able to kind of just reorient and say, mm-hmm. hey, this is my goal and my mission as a mom. And this is a great chance for me to slow down and be intentional with my kids. And like you said, building that culture as a family of communication. And I think mealtimes just serve as that vehicle. Mm-hmm. So Sally, as we close here, is there anything that you would just want to encourage a young mom in? Anything that you could kind of say to all of us that are, you know, a few stages behind you here now, from the perspective of an older, wiser woman, what would you say to some of us young moms who are still really battling what they call the trenches?
Yeah. Well, I would say, I think one of my loves in the ministry that I've been doing all these years is to start small groups. I think a small group can be two people. Read a book together, have that encouragement that you can have from another mom who's in the same place. She can listen to your complaints. She can love you. She can pray for you. So I would first say a woman in her own home who's alone with sinful children and messes all day long will be discouraged. Mm-hmm. And we were created for friendship and community. And because our family moved 17 times, 6 times internationally, I was always having to start my groups. You know, I would just kind of have my antenna out and look for somebody either a little bit older than me that I thought could teach me something if I liked her family, what she looked like, or I would look for somebody whose kids, my kids, could play with that had some similar values, and I would have them over for a play date or for a group or whatever. But anyway, I think that for me, as I look back, having a handful of friends, and they live all over the United States, but we have walked with each other through miscarriages and difficulties and rebellious children and toddler days. And I don't think I can make it another day. Can you take my children days? Mm-hmm. And so first of all, I think real fellowship. I think staying in the Word. And if you don't even know what that means, I would say read a couple of my books, because I try to write Bible studies in the back, or Bible verses in the back of each book, so that women could start having anchors for things that they would remember and that would be there for them. And then I think the third thing I would say is cultivate a sustainable life. If you are an introvert, you have to really create in your own life a time that it seems impossible, but it is possible, where you can be by yourself and where you can have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, whatever you want. Or have one time a week. I know eventually my husband said, you just need to get away from here. So a couple of days a week, he would stay home until 8 o'clock in the morning before he went to the office. And I would go to this French restaurant at 6:30 in the morning. And I would have my own piece of quiche that no one else tasted. And
a dream. Yeah, and you'd have it warm.
Yeah, and he would get the kids up, and you know, he would give them whatever they were eating, and then I would have an hour and a half twice a week at a particular time. It's when I wrote my first book, actually. But I think if whatever you need, if you need a friend, if you need more sleep, whatever you need to plan your life to be sustainable, so that you will continually be able to have something your children can draw from. If you become empty, you will have nothing to give. And so I would say that those are some things to think about. And also to remember that God loves you. He is on your side. He's cheering you on. He's saying, you are amazing. I made women and moms to be the civilizers of the whole world, and I believe in you. And, you know, living in grace and not in condemnation is so important.
Well, thank you, Sally. I feel like this has just been such a truth-filled interview. I'm sure it's going to be so encouraging to many of our listeners. So we just really, truly appreciate you being on Risen Motherhood today.
Oh, yeah, I just love being with you all, and I love what you do. So thank you for encouraging all of us out there.
Thank you.